This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello, and welcome to Been There, Done That, with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Hello, gentlemen.
Good morning, whatever time it is. Yes, good day. How are you?
That was Gordon, and this is Phil.
Oh, that's right. So we know your voices.
Yes, yes.
We don't know your faces unless you look. Go and have a look at the podcast page.
Have we got our faces up there, have we?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
oh.
Don't spend too much time looking at that picture.
No. The thing is, you've got to allocate the voice with the face because we haven't actually indicated on the picture who is what.
Yeah, well, the one with the squeaky voice is me.
Oh, the one...
The one with the fabulously interesting voice, because I can't think of anything else to say.
And the one who's got a perfect face for radio, that's me.
Oh, well done.
Well, see, now he's given a hint on which one he is in the picture.
Oh, yes, that's
not
right.
A good hint, because it could be any of us.
It's lovely to have you with us, and thanks very much to the team from Fad Lib Fade Out. So there you are.
Can I say it's been a very cold week? It's been very, very cold.
You could
week.
Say that.
But that's only due to the temperature.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
It is actually winter.
Is it?
Oh, yes. We're beyond the solstice. This is real, actual winter.
Oh, okay.
Not political winter, which started on the first of the month.
Yes. Oh, you're getting in my act now, aren't you?
Well, no, I've said this all along. It's the way the Americans do it. On the solstice, is the change of the season.
And the equinox is the change of the other seasons.
That's right.
That's right.
Last weekend, there was the hint that we might have snow, and there's still hints around in the weather forecasts.
Because the snow actually was in Dandenong or something, rather, wasn't it?
On they had the weekend? A brush of snow.
Yeah, yeah.
But where the snow should be, we had lots.
Yeah.
Yes.
And my friends in Brisbane, they were complaining. They said, stop sending your rotten cold weather up to us. They had a daytime max of 15 degrees only.
Well, serves all the people right from going up there from here
poor
up there to get
loves.
The sun.
Yeah. And they've been sending us their stupid humid summers.
Oh, yeah.
So take that.
Fair exchange.
And we won't mention about climate change.
Oh, there's no such thing.
No.
The Prime Minister told me.
No, just climate variability.
Oh, is that what it is?
It is, yes.
Oh, good. I'm glad we're various.
Been There, Done That is a history type program. We talk about gay matters, gay people, anniversaries that occur at about this time, events that are featuring in the current news, and things like
and what do you say
elections
when...
we ignore.
Yes. But what do you say when something's really messy and yucky and you don't want to be a part of it?
I don't know. What
you
is
it? EU.
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 Oh,
hello.
EU.
So that's just a passing comment.
Oh, okay.
Well, let it never be said that on the 1st of July in the year 2000, Prime Minister John Howard introduced the GST.
Yes, he did, with the help of the Meg Lees from the Democrats, wasn't it?
It was.
Because she say, but she did, she made John Howard take out education. Anything to do with education wasn't taxable, and food that was of a certain way, if it wasn't
it was
cooked,
already
wasn't cooked. If it wasn't
right.
cooked, if it was it wasn't a cooked
if
situation,
the, that's right.
That didn't have a GST, and there was something. There were three things that she said that she would pass the GST law if John Howard took them out of the equation. So he did to get the rest of it through,
yeah. And it made it a lot more palatable.
It
yes,
certainly
that's right,
did.
Because it was then you could take it home and cook it.
Well, yeah. There's always been sales tax, but that's been usually...
There used to be a wholesale tax.
Yes.
Yes, that was around about 15% on certain items and different items with different prices.
But this
prices.
Is... the GST is a consumption tax, which means that it's probably a little better balanced because everybody ends up paying a bit.
But it did bring on the black economy, ooh, where people did things for cash rather than having it done as a receipted item, you know, so that there's a lot of black money floating around in the market even today.
Mm.
And when they were talking about raising the GST again earlier this year, there was somebody wrote in the thing, said, well, that would make the black economy go about twice as much as it is now.
Mm.
Yeah. Which economy are we? Because we're getting paid nothing for this.
Well, we're still being charged the tax, though.
On the electricity we're using?
No. For everything that we go and buy, there's the tax there, and that's the GST.
Mm.
So that's, you get it on the income, you pay income tax, and you also pay on the spending.
But the raising of the GST really affected the people on the lower income brackets, which was the problem. And they're still...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's still, if they had have brought the GST up, they were going to bring the GST up onto everything, food and the rest of it, which would have meant that people on lower incomes would have had a very, very hard time of getting the being able to pay for everything. You know?
I think that's the government's approach, though. If you make food so expensive that the poor can't eat it, the poor eventually go away.
Oh, do they?
And they stop complaining.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
It probably makes, yeah.
Well, I think...
It's not a good policy.
I think the imbalance in the population between those that have and those that have not is actually getting a bit wider.
A lot wider.
We might talk about that a little later, gentlemen. Mm.
But one of the things that...
Some of the signs we see in society at the moment verifies that.
But see, John Howard also introduced a change to the Marriage Act. Without any pre-what's name at all, he just said, right, we're going to change the Marriage Act because the churches were at him and some certain religious groups were at him to change the law from being a marriage between two people to a marriage between a man and a woman.
And he
just got up there and said, righto, and of course his right wing of his party were all for it. And so they were able to pass that bill.
Wouldn't that be great if they could do the reverse now?
Oh, well, yes. I mean,
wouldn't that be so easy?
But nobody asked me if I wanted him to change it in the first place.
No.
So why do you have... I don't need to be asked now to change it back.
No.
Just do it.
That's exactly right. And this is what the problem is. And Penny Wong, in her speech to one of the lectures she was giving, she was going on about the hate that she would get, the vilification that she and her family would get.
Yeah.
Because, and all the rest of it. And I agree with her. I've been saying this all along since the plebiscite was first mentioned, that we are going to suffer from this.
I mean, one of the things that she quoted in the papers last weekend was someone referred to me in the press as that Asian, lesbian, unmarried mother.
Mm.
I mean, how loaded a comment was she allowed to be vilified with it became nasty.
Mm.
Oh no, that's tolerable apparently. Yeah,
but the ACL also wanted the law changed so that they could take out the section of the law that's a discriminatory law that says that you can't discriminate against people.
Oh, you mean that business organisation?
No, ACL,
Australian Christian Lobby.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's not representative.
Not represented of the, many people, no. Anyhow.
But why don't they actually have the guts to stand up and say they're against our equal rights?
Well, this is what they don't do.
We're not infringing on anything in their lives.
No.
They're just saying we can't have what they've got.
Oh, excuse me, we are infringing on Lyle Shelton's life because they said that if somebody asked him if he was married and he had to say yes, they would wonder whether he was married to a man, for God's sake.
Oh, and what about Scott Morrison? He'd been vilified,
apparently. He's been vilified, yeah, for having religious convictions.
Yeah, hello. Hello.
No, he's being vilified for a whole other bunch of reasons.
Basically, we have no brains.
We haven't got time to go through them.
But this is the problem, you see. This is the start of it, and we haven't even entered into the plebiscite. But then again, the government are not going to even bother with the result of the plebiscite. They've said that they don't have to vote for it if they don't want it. So why are we spending $160 million bloody dollars?
Yeah, I've got an idea. Give me the $160 million and you go off and talk amongst yourselves.
Can you take us around the world on holidays, can you?
No, just give me the money.
Oh, all right.
I'm not going to share it.
You're not going to share it. No, but it's just, to me, that money is such a waste.
From the same government who are telling us we don't have money to do anything good for people.
No, that's right.
We're going to cut taxes to multinational corporations and do it. If you're rich, you're in a really good spot with us.
This is right, yeah.
But, yeah, don't ask for help.
Don't ask for help, no, because that'd be the wrong thing to do. Yeah, it is just so wrong and it just makes my blood boil. I can put up with anything they give to me. and say about me because I could just tell them to go and drop dead or words to that effect. I'm not going to say the right words on this radio program, but I would tell them to
I take offence at the word plebiscite.
Yes.
I feel belittled. And well, it's probably those, who are they?
It comes from the Romans, plebeians, which means anybody else other than the Senate.
Well, see, they might have been good at plumbing. I'll give them that.
No, that's plumbians.
If I'm going to be a plebe, then I'm going to vote the way I want to.
Good.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Time for a spot of music, I think. Let's get the cheerful Scissor Sisters. But they're not all that happy either because they don't feel like dancing.
Oh,
that's not very good, is it?
Well, we always feel like dancing when we hear this music.
Oh, well, watch out. Turn the mics off. Push the chairs back. Here we go.
This is Senator Penny Wong. You're listening to Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Gordon, Phil and Chris here.
With
you
Penny.
Never done that? With whom?
Penny.
With Penny.
Wong.
We just had Penny
We just
Wong.
Heard from her.
We just heard from her.
Oh, yes.
She might have phoned that one in, actually.
Yeah.
I think she did. Yeah. Sound about.
I tell you what, have you walked around the streets of the city much, Chris, or do you just come in by train and get a tram?
Well, I've certainly noticed as I walk down Bourke Street that there seems to be quite a few people who are using the city as their resting place.
The streets as their home sort of thing. Yes. And to me, it's getting worse, you know, because why is this happening? Why can't we have homes for these people? Why can't? Because we always used to. There was always the Housing Commission that had homes. They've had these big blocks of flats that were built everywhere for people with low incomes and all the rest of it. But now it seems to be that everywhere you walk, every doorway's got somebody sleeping in it.
Well, for some reason or other, the city seems to attract people. I think it's possibly because the city actually is warm.
Probably safer too.
It is safer.
Probably safer. If you were out in the suburbs sleeping on the streets, anything could happen to you. But in the city, you do have the police sort of working around every now and again, and people feel a lot safer by being in the city.
The nature of the city has changed in the last, let's say, decade.
Hmm.
We now have people residing in the CBD, which when I was a young man, that simply didn't happen.
That's right.
The city was deserted outside business hours. And so you've got that population and we've got a greater tourist population. So the city is alive, probably 24/7.
Yep.
Probably less alive in the middle of the night. But like you say, there's a safety in those numbers.
It's a safety thing for them to be sleeping in the streets of the city rather than the streets in the suburbs.
Well, do you remember that poor fellow that
Mouse.
Was sleeping? Yeah, Mouse, who was sleeping under the railway bridges down by the Yarra.
Mm.
I wouldn't have thought that was a particularly warm part to be in. But
it was a very safe spot, apparently, and until his story was on Australian Story on the ABC last week. Actually,
was it?
Yeah, and it was very interesting. He had his sister was one of the people that spoke about him. He did have a bit of a problem when he was a young man, and he got into the drug scene and all the rest of it. But that was part and parcel of what happened to him. But apparently, he liked motorbikes, and he apparently took a motorbike that belonged to this young guy that actually killed him.
Oh, right.
It's a very sad story. It's and down at that place, they have still got that where Mouse used to sleep is vacant. Nobody will sleep there.
That's memorial.
That's memorial to Mouse, and they've got Mouse's name written up on the bricks or the concrete. But that should never have happened. You see, this is the problem with people that are these people. But why does it happen? Why are they on the street? This is the unknown quality of it all, isn't it?
Well, I suppose there's a few basic facts. The fact that they can't afford, they don't have an income to allow them to rent somewhere.
Mm.
They don't have family connections that are able to provide support. They might be certainly out of a job, and they might be just simply discriminated against, outcast from society.
Yeah, well, it's a thing. A very dear old friend of mine who worked in the state government years and years ago as an auditor, and he used to go around and do the auditing for all these institutions which looked after people that were not, you know, were off the side of society, you know. And he always says it's the worst thing that Kennett ever did was to close those institutions, because those people had somewhere safe to be.
Well, that was their first port of call in emergency situations.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting that the churches, the faith-based organisations, have picked up the state role of looking after them as the first port of call? Salvation Army, Anglicare, St. Vincent de Paul, these sort of organisations.
Yep.
And they're charitable, and charity is actually got a bad name. It's got a bad odour about it.
Well, a lot of the charities, of course, you get flooding into your mailbox. Out of every dollar that you give them, 20 cents goes to the charity rather than the administration fees and all the rest of it, you know. And there are certain charities that are very, very good in that way, that they do put, say, 90% into the whatever they're doing, and 10% is just for the...
But to the homeless themselves, there's probably some pride left at some level, and they don't want charity.
Yeah.
They see that as... The ultimate defeat, almost. Mm. It's like, if I have to take that, then I've lost.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
But I think soup kitchens and the mobile
showers down and there, mobile washing machines. They've got washing machine. Two guys with a washing machine in a truck go around.
Yeah, I think they're very good support organisations, because, as you say, Phil, it maintains pride or the opportunity for them to maintain their own pride. Even something simple as, you know, having a haircut. Certainly you can get $10 haircuts around, but you've got to have the $10
first.
That's
right, yeah. And there's a lot of the council are doing, trying to do something about it by trying to organise something where these people can sort of go to as safe refuges. But a lot of it is caused, of course, by a lot of the rooming houses that used to be in Carlton and in St Kilda and everything. They have been closed down because the property is so valuable that the people that owned them have sold them to make huge profits on the real estate, and then they've been pulled down and made into blocks of flats.
That's right. So the housing stock is not being replaced. The single little rooms that you could rent, or in fact, as you say, boarding houses of one sort or another.
Mm.
Some of these people need support for mental illness.
Oh, yes.
And if that's not there at the limits or availability like it had before, where they could be caught in a safety net.
That's right.
Now, if you have to go looking for the net, that's an entirely different picture.
Well, see, once you're homeless and you're a long grass person, let's call it that as well, because you're just outcast from the city or the town, you don't have a permanent address. You don't have any way that, in fact, the pension can catch up with you or any support funding. And it's a catch-22 situation.
Well, some of them may be on the pension, of course, because if you register, even though you haven't got a, you could register with a post office box or something or other. I don't know about it. I've never been on the pension.
No. Of course, that brings back to the other thing, that if, in fact, you've always only had itinerant jobs or casual jobs, you probably haven't got superannuation of any sort.
No.
And this is dreadful, that you've got none of your own resources. You've never had the opportunity to build up real estate, you know, bricks and mortar. We say, you know, get a house over your head and then defend that house. And you live and die there.
Well, look at what's happening with housing, of course. There are the young people that can't afford to buy a house because of all this, the money that's flooding in from China, for instance, to buy houses and just negative gear and all the rest of it.
Mm. But see, the homeless picture includes people who never fitted into that model.
That's right.
They were never going to get a house.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
It was just the cards didn't land in their favour.
Mm.
And we as a society, I think for a long time now, have been happy to say, well, someone will take care of that.
Yes.
Which turns out to be someone else.
Somebody else, yeah.
But even people that have fallen foul of the system and done time, then they exit the prison system, they're not given particularly much support by the state.
No, nothing at all. You get out, there you go, there's the door. Goodbye.
Yeah, that's it.
See you later. Sometimes, there's a very good group that I think it's from the Catholic Church that do a lot of work with prisoners that are coming out of jail and all the rest of it, and try to keep them, give them somewhere to go to live and to get themselves reorganised into society. But of course, once you've been in that situation, it's very hard to get a job because nobody will employ you if you've been in jail.
There must be a variation in the prison system. And I don't know if it's state or, you know, city versus country, but one of the contestants on Family Feud this week was he introduced himself as a prison guard. And it turns out that he is an instructor and he teaches spray painting. So then you get a job at an auto shop or something like that once you come out.
Oh, right. Too.
So they're actually rehabilitating the inmates.
But then again,
that's obviously not universal.
Mm. No. Well, I know that at the youth training centres...
Yes, that used to be. Are they still available?
I think they are. I think there's one up Kyneton Way, somewhere up there, Malmesbury, that in fact the kids are given a trade by the time they come out, a short-term trade or a long-term trade, if they were an apprentice at the time. They can maintain their status of being an apprentice whilst they're inside. And that's sort of useful. But, you know, talk about those people that are driven out of house and home by family or domestic violence.
Well, there's a lot of gay people that are like that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of young gay people, when they tell their parents, if their parents are strict religious people, they're likely to kick them out.
There's a lot of dinosaurs out there, even without religion.
Yes.
No gay son is going to live in my house.
Yeah, or gay daughter. Yeah. That's another thing. There are a lot of gay homeless people, of course, that they couch surf or whatever they call it with friends there, sleep on the couch for a few nights here and sleep on the couch for a few nights there. So that's another thing that, once again, getting back to the plebiscite.
Yeah. Now, well, they said 160 million there. That would have put up a few blocks of flats, wouldn't it?
A couple of roofs,
indeed.
Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes I feel very helpless, and in fact, we're often told that we shouldn't just give our loose change out because that encourages the people on the street to continue putting their hand out there. Mm. When in fact, there should be other organisations that we should be supporting instead, that can go and offer them positive services like. Okay, we will give you food, but we won't give you $20 because that could be frittered away on ciggies or something that actually doesn't support or extend them out.
Well, I gave my most recent car, which actually belonged to my brother, to the charity that auctions them off and builds youth housing and gives the car owner the tax break.
All right.
So if they sell it for $500, you can say, well, you know, I gave $500 to charity.
Mm.
Right.
And they come and collect the car, you never see it again.
Whoa. Oh, so I think one of the other things is that we're encouraged to give respect to the people who find themselves in these situations and consider the organisations that might actually be doing the good for them supporting those instead.
Well, I do support quite a few of those people.
You know, you can donate to those organisations or you can volunteer.
Mm.
And if you want to donate, go online, see if you can donate directly to the organisation.
Oh, yes, rather than via the chuggers in the street.
Collection companies.
Oh, yes. No,
my donations go straight to the companies, yeah.
We've got Kelly Osborne here. She's going to sing one word for us. I don't know what the word is, so we...
Help!
Oh, well.
That's another song.
No, respect might be another word. Volunteer might be another word.
Could be any sort of word.
Let's hear Kelly.
Hey, we're the Veronicas, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. And thanks for your feedback. If you'd like to send a message to us, remember, email beenthere@joy.org.au.
You may wish to correct us.
Well, there might be some comment you would like us to talk about too, with some topic. We could also
take music requests.
We could do that.
What a jolly good idea.
They can request anything I like. If we haven't got it, we won't play it.
Thanks. We've been talking the last couple of weeks about the fact that this time of the year in the Northern Hemisphere is Pride season.
It is June. The month of June is usually Pride month, isn't it, around America, Canada, Britain, Europe?
Well,
because it's the weather, of course.
Well, it is the best weather that's supposed to be around at that stage of the game. But there was a little press report. Did you see that in the US, actually, the Stonewall Pub has been given a heritage
status,
protection classification.
Mm. Thank you, Mr. Obama.
Mr. Obama did that.
Did he?
Yes, he made that declaration, and it's now Stonewall will be there forever.
That is brilliant, isn't it?
So at least they seem to be doing a lot more for the gay community in America, and with this latest crisis in Orlando, it's really brought to the fore the fact that people have to be protected, you know, and this is the point. But we've still got the NRA, the National Rifle Association.
There's still a lot of rednecks in America.
Mm.
I don't have his name, but there's a judge in Texas, surprise, surprise, who did not lower his flag to half-staff in honour of the Orlando victims, because he said if I had to do that for everybody who was shot, that we might as well not have flagpoles.
Yes, of course. But
now, he's admitting, A, that they're killing so many of themselves that they can't keep up, and B, just showing a great disrespect for people he obviously has no respect for.
Yeah, well, there was a very interesting article on the Gay Google News that I subscribe to, and they were saying that the GLBTIQ community of America are joining with Mothers Against Guns and a few other of those organisations, and they're going to start fighting the NRA. They said that they have had enough is enough. They should be brought into line with the rest of the community.
Well,
and
if you do the math, there must be enough people who have been affected by a massacre, either directly or indirectly, compared to the number of people in the NRA.
Yeah.
Just tip the scales.
It's not very. The NRA are very wealthy, but they don't have a hell of a lot of members when you consider that there's 300 million people living in America.
Yeah.
They don't have that many people, but they have so much.
They've bought policy, basically.
Well, they buy the senators and their Congress. They get them all elected, don't they? Yeah, which is, and that's what they're hoping that the GLBTIQ community might be able to do with these other groups, together and start fighting them.
Give us a ball, tell us to run, we can do a lot.
Yes, we can. Well, with that, as they
sometimes said, we drop the ball. We're not too good.
Yep, as they said,
not all that sporty. Some of us.
The gay community fought the government in America about the AIDS crisis, and they fought the government in America about equal marriage. And there's another one that they fought them and won too, but I can't remember what that was. But they did say, it was an article I was reading, that they said that they are very, very strong when they start fighting for something, and that's what we are.
And see, we're behind the eight ball here, because in America they've got hate crime legislation.
That's right. Yes.
So you can't just come out and vilify somebody. So the gay community has got a lot of legislative support.
Yeah, but
which we frankly don't have here. We don't have equal rights to get married.
No, that's right. But we do have the hate crime defence in criminal system. We have that here. You cannot murder somebody and say it's a gay defence.
No.
You know, that's
the
that's
gay not. Panic defence.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't they bring that back in Queensland, though?
They've just put it in Queensland. It's never been in Queensland, but they're just talking about putting it in.
Yeah. But we have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm. But anyhow, gay pride is a place.
In the UK, I saw a little piece on the computer as well. One of the marchings, I think, was in London.
It was London. It was London
Gay
Pride.
And it was a whole mess of people on the street watching the parade, but the section I saw showed some police people walking along, marching along in uniform.
That's right.
In uniform. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting as well?
They
do it here in Victoria. The police march in ours in uniform.
We've got our glow people.
Yeah. Hold on. Some people have said that the army have said it's desecration of the uniform.
Oh, well, the police don't seem to think that. But anyhow,
the army can look in their own backyard.
You were saying about the London Pride with the policeman.
And one of them broke from the march and went over to the crowd, down on his knee in front of a big fellow, and they exchanged vows.
They proposed.
He proposed to him, and whacko!
And everybody let off crackers and balloons and all sorts
confetti,
of things.
Confetti. Yeah. It was actually a very touching moment, in fact. But it was good. But it obviously showed there was a compassionate or
an acceptance.
An accepting audience or community around them. The policeman must have felt empowered to be able to do this action without being vilified.
And it's just very nice to think that they have gay people in London now.
Yeah, but what are the
honey?
The International Development Secretary in the British Parliament, she came out during Pride March, Justine Greening. She tweeted that she was marching with her partner and all the rest of it, and told the world that she was gay.
So when I come out, nothing in the newspapers at all?
No. Oh, God, no.
I have to do it again once I'm in government.
That's right, yes. When you're the
when I'm Prime Minister. Then gay marriage is the least of your problems.
Yes,
now,
yes.
Apparently that particular march that I saw the bit and piece of, it's been running for 43 years. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, Peter Tatchell was one of the people that started that. He was 1972.
That Australian?
Australian.
Oh, golly
gosh. He started London Pride and got the march going. Yeah,
they must have sore legs if they've been marching that long.
43 years. Wow. We would have thought they'd reached their destination by now, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, it's like my old grandma.
What's that?
We put her on an exercise program. And she used to walk 5 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have no idea where she is.
Well, here's a couple of other things that happened on the London Pride March. There was a police helicopter up above having a look at things.
That was because of the security.
Yeah.
From anybody that, some nutter that might have gone around there and tried to throw a bomb or something.
Well, true, but that's a sad indictment of the community in general. But, yeah, we know the nutters are around. The march also came to a halt for 1 minute to mark the crowd's respect for the 49 deaths in Orlando.
That's right, yes.
And that would have been a moving moment as well. Something else, London's Mayor Sadiq Khan addressed the crowds in Trafalgar Square to underline the city's commitment to the GLBT community and also the support for the Orlando residents. And I think there's just so much support and respect shown in those sort of things that you wonder why it can't be across the board and people just get on with their lives.
But of course,
do you have to stir up trouble?
But with the English having equal marriage rights now, you know, that's taken a hell of a lot of pressure off everybody. You know, and this is why it makes it much easier. And the Mayor of London, the Lord Mayor of London, Mr. Khan, is a Pakistani.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a Muslim.
That is interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, in the UK, well, the MPs in their parliament, there's 35 other out peers or cabinet members or whatever. It's incredible.
As I've always said, we're everywhere, we're bigger than Rotary.
There's just nothing to say to that. I'd like to point out, though, to the ACL and a few other organisations that with equal rights for gay marriage in the UK and in the US and a lot of other places,
Spain,
the
and all
sky
of them.
Is yet to fall.
And chicken licking's quite safe.
Yep, so they can take their little peanuts.
Throw them at one another.
Yeah, or eat them and just stay quiet, let people get married who love each other.
Yeah, well, this is the point. They have no right to say who you love and who you can...
Well, see, they think they do.
Yes, of course.
So we've got to do some learning out there.
And they take their inspiration from a book that was written by people way back about 4,000 years ago that means absolutely nothing all in today's modern society.
Of course.
There are good things in it. There are good things in that book. But a lot of it is just
a lot of it contradicts
control.
The other half.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
You can believe what you want and that's the problem.
That's right. Yeah. But you can take bits
written,
and pieces
spoken,
out of it.
Written, spoken, authorised by me.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us.
Now, another big thing that sort of cropped up a part of the election that's just about finished, another couple of days to go, I guess, was the Barrier Reef, the way that's being sort of
killed.
But that's climate change, which doesn't exist. So I don't know why you're raising that subject. Hello. Yeah,
there's also runoff.
Runoff?
From mining.
And
it's just polluting the water around the reef, and the reef is saying, yuck.
Yuck.
And also from farming.
With the pesticides.
Fertilisers, yeah, and pesticides.
But it's not only the Great Barrier Reef that's dying. There are coral reefs up apparently around in Indonesia that are already dead, you know, because it is from global warming. It's a thing because
the
water temperature,
the
water temperature has risen too high for them.
And men just being a little bit lazy and superior, thinking, well, you know, I'll just tip my rubbish in the water, it'll go away.
Well, of course, you've got another great big thing that's going to go up there. They're going to start building that big port to take out the coal, you know, and that's going to be right into the middle of, basically in the middle of the Barrier Reef. So, anyhow.
And that coal will be burnt so that the CO2 can go back into the atmosphere.
Oh, but only over China.
In another country, yeah.
Or India.
Where they haven't seen a blue sky for decades.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
Not good at all.
I don't know what will happen, but it's...
I mean, Captain Cook, I would have loved to have known the conditions when his boat scraped over the coral reefs in those days, what the condition of the Barrier Reef was in that stage.
The trouble is he had an iPhone minus 400.
But
his pictures didn't last.
But the point is that they wouldn't have realised what was there, I wouldn't have thought. this great coral reef.
He would
reef
have
was.
Noticed a bit of the reef that he ran into.
Oh, yeah, he would have seen that. But then again, he probably wouldn't have thought that this goes on for very long, although he was a pretty astute man. But he did have to sail up and he had to beach his ship and they had to fix the boat up and all the rest
but
of it.
But see, what's normal for him, 200-odd years ago,
yes,
everything was unpolluted.
That's right.
They had fish there to be caught. Mm. It would have been pristine and he would have just considered that to be normal.
That's right, yeah.
The colour of the water he might have noticed and the fact he can see through it and it's tropical and not quite the Thames.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. They would have seen a sandy bottom or whatever. Or oh, nothing like a sandy bottom, I say.
Oh, most uncomfortable.
Not too good on a water slide.
Oh, we had to throw that in.
But I believe Mr. Cook didn't have water slides.
No, he didn't. No,
or SeaWorld or any of the movie things up in Queensland.
And that's another thing with that new movie that's out, that Dory, the new movie.
Yeah, well, Nemo and Dory would have been on those reefs in bucket loads.
But they're very worried that Dory is going to become an endangered species because of this movie, because people will be wanting to have a Dory.
The second part of that story is the fact that they haven't got any stocks to give to all the kids that are going to want them.
Yep.
But the thing is, they can't actually breed them in captivity.
They can't, no.
So their only place to get them is from the wild, which means stocks will be depleted there.
The Chinese will come to our rescue because they've started selling
plastic
octopus or octopi and little fish that when you put them in water, they swim around and flap around. And
like the old sea monkeys that used to be around.
Well, they were actual living organisms. These are mechanical things. But if you tell a kid that story, that should shut them up.
Right, okay. But it's just terrible. But then, of course, it's one of the myths of the age that these fish are going to be there forever and they're not going to be if you start making these.
Another one of the myths is that even though I might protest my innocence...
Oh, you never protest your innocence.
...being a straight person, that mightn't necessarily be so.
Well, that's happened a lot in through history, hasn't it? There have been a lot of people that have always said that they were straight and then they get caught out for having sort of little peccadillos with the person of the same sex.
And these are often men of the cloth.
Very
or
so.
Or people who put themselves up on pedestals.
Well, they talk themselves as evangelists and all the rest of it, and we're talking about one particular
or,
one.
Well, that's right, but unfortunately there's been a lot of other gentlemen of the cloth who've been very, very naughty.
Oh, yes, especially in the local church around Victoria. Oh.
That's our local problem.
That's our local problem.
But we're talking about Ted Haggard. Haggard, yes. Not Haggard.
Yeah.
Haggard. And he was an evangelist, one of these Bible thumping, loud mouthed.
Yes. God will get you for that.
Spruikers. And it now turns out that he didn't mind entertaining some hired help in his hotel room.
Mm.
The hired help being of the male variety. Mm. And the help that was given was of a below the belt nature.
In other words, he was having sex with a prostitute, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, putting it straightforward.
But the mechanism that runs that is internalised homophobia.
Oh, of course it is. Yes.
So his great objection publicly was to somehow compensate for his internal battle,
yeah,
knowing that he's doing this stuff and liking it.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
no doubt that it's enjoyable.
Well, he wouldn't have done it if he didn't enjoy it.
Well, a lot of people tend to go that way, don't they?
Keep on doing it.
Exactly.
But yeah, when you're publicly saying, oh, this, you know, you'll burn in hell and, you know, God hates you and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, but once again, you get these people who are in power like him that, you know, even our politicians that are trying to tell us how to live, you know, and it's just the same. And all these people trying to tell us how we should be living our lives, and we're probably more moral than most of them. You know,
well, certainly more consistent.
Yes, consistent well, in morality.
Well, see, Kinsey, who had a birthday round about the 23rd of June, because he was born in 1894, Alfred C. Kinsey, he was one of the first sexologists to try and explain and justify, and we'll come back to the justify in a little moment, but explain the breadth of sexuality not being binary.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. He did. He tried to work it out that there were people who were in a scale of 10. There was so many people that were completely gay or completely heterosexual, and some people in the middle were swinging both ways.
Well, he did that with the assistance of his good lady wife.
And his young male partner. Well, that's right.
Laboratory assistant.
I think he was an assistant.
A laboratory assistant.
But he was a very wise man. You know how you shouldn't mix business and pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did, and he had a great time doing it.
And he made a fortune out of writing about it.
So he would have been the kinkiest dude on the street, but because he scientifically documented it, it was all above board.
Oh, yes. Well, someone else who mixed business with pleasure, or pleasure with business, was the film actor Marlon Brando. What a macho figure he was in so many ways. Remember the film Godfather?
Oh, what a gorgeous... I can remember him even younger than the Godfather when he was in On the Waterfront. He was magnificent, a magnificent-looking man, beautiful-looking man.
He dressed in that, or he was dressed in that, in typical gay fashion. Fashion that became typically gay.
Okay, that's right, yeah. He was basically, he was bisexual. He enjoyed the company of both men and women.
He was greedy.
Yes. But when he was making Apocalypse Now, he was supposed to have been on with the Prime Minister of Thailand or something or other.
Oh, golly gosh.
They were having a relationship.
That was a misunderstanding. He said, let's go Taiwan on. And he did.
Because he was staying in Thailand while he was filming in the jungles of somewhere or other
But see, in his earlier days, he could have done anything he wanted because he was under a studio contract.
That's right.
And they would have had all the press releases to keep him straight and marketable.
Hmm.
And he could just go and do whomever he wanted.
He was DDG.
What?
Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Okay.
When he was young. In the early days.
When he was young, he was a very handsome
man. Because by the time he did Drop Dead... But gorgeous was not the word.
No, he was rather overweight and sort of, yeah.
Towards the end, apparently he's Marlon Brando had affairs with James Dean and Rock Hudson. So,
well,
Hollywood Reporters.
Rock Hudson gay?
I believe.
Was Rock Hudson gay?
Oh, possibly so.
James Dean? No. Who'd have thunk that?
Laurence Olivier, Burt Lancaster, John Gielgud. Tyrone Power, Montgomery Clifts, and even Paul Newman was mentioned at one stage, but I'm only going on gossip.
I think they would have all been very, very much after him rather than him being after them, quite frankly.
Oh, there's...
Well, he would have been in the position to reject their requests.
Yes.
You're not going to use the gay defence, are you?
Oh, definitely.
No. So we see interesting examples of gayness left, right, and blum and centre.
Oh, there we're everywhere. We're everywhere.
And can I point something out?
Please do.
It's nothing new.
No.
Well, of course
it
is.
They mention it in the Bible.
We've been around for 4,000 years.
And that was written hours ago.
Yeah.
That's how current it is.
Yeah, well,
and we've got to blame the straight people for breeding us.
That's right. If you don't want gay people, don't stop breeding.
We didn't do it.
We didn't do it.
I am innocent. I know nothing.
I know nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. Excellent.
So there we go. But it just beggars belief that people can be as stupid as they are sometimes.
Well, I've got to have a Simpsons comment.
Go for it.
Please.
At the Springfield Pride March.
Oh, yes.
Homer's standing out the front of his house saying, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. And Homer's not gay. And somebody said, oh, where did you hear that? He said, oh, the moustache parade last year.
The moustache parade.
Fair enough,
because
yes.
that was a very good look in the 70s, wasn't it?
Oh, well, it was a look. Yeah, I was lucky I was young and couldn't grow a moustache in the 70s.
I can remember some of our VFL footballers.
Oh, yes, they all had them.
They always said, it's the season for moustaches.
And those terribly tight shorts.
Oh, yes, but you look at those...
I wasn't complaining about that.
No, but you look at those guys now, and they haven't weathered all that well, and you look and think, oh, that might have been hiding a multitude of sins, that big caterpillar on your upper lip. Anyway, not to worry. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next week.
Yes, we've had a wonderful show this week. It's been
we've
fun.
Enjoyed ourselves. We've we had a bit ourselves. Of a chuckle.
Yeah.
And, well, the...
We also hit on serious topics which needed discussion by intellectuals such as ourselves.
And by the time we come back next week, we'll have a the same government or a new one. We're not quite sure.
At least we'll have some peace and quiet.
I don't think it'll be the same because there might be a few changes in the wind.
I'm sure there will be some changes around.
Yeah. So there we are. Thanks again. Cheerio for now. The Veronicas are singing us out, and we'll have... Who's coming up after us?
Stand Up Straight's coming straight after us, and then the Spirit Lounge.
Thank you very much, Gordon.
But you can sit down if you want to listen to Stand Up Straight.
Oh, can you?
Yes, you can.
Oh, I thought I might lie down and listen to that.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.